that admonition of John. Well, the Lord inspired Barbara in our church that morning with an idea about how to implement John's words. A Christmas shopping center where we provide needy people the dignity of selecting the gifts that they give to their families. Well, in 2 weeks she had it all organized, and our church responded by donating clothing, toys, and gift items. Volunteers welcomed the people and who had been contacted through the local Children and Family Services Agency. And our church folks joyfully participated, wrapping the presents, welcoming the people. It was just a great highlight. It was a highlight of our time at that church. And when I think about Barbara, I think of how the Lord used her idea in a special way at Christmas. Well, God was in it. It was so clear that God was in it. Well, as Aubrey Malfers has adequately covered the facets of implementation of vision in chapters 6 and 7 of his book. That's pages 123 to 172. I want to ask you to read and review those chapters and then look at pages 141, 140 to 143 and pages 170 and the discussion questions in terms of thinking through those discussion questions, especially applying it to your own local situation. The experience with Barbara and her Christmas shopping center idea was a good experience, but I've also been approached with some bad ideas. Well, some ideas that, I've had some of my own, that it wasn't so much, well, that they were bad ideas. Some of them were, though, bad ideas, but that the suggestions for ministry programs weren't right, you know, either at the time or in some pieces ever. Let's discuss two aspects of vision implementation. First, recruiting to the vision, and then releasing visionary creativity in your church or ministry. Recruiting to the vision means taking a portion of the overall vision and saying to someone, here, take this and run with it. Going back to my friend's new ministry in Ireland, one of the important components of this ministry will be training ministry assistants. She can't do this by herself. As she has received extensive training and has much experience in pro-life counseling, she can conduct the training sessions herself, but where is she going to get the trainees? Most of these sources apply in other ministry situations as well that we're going to be talking about, but this is going to be a matter for her to address right from the beginning as she starts her ministry there. So we begin thinking about this and just coming up with a list of possible sources where she can recruit people to enter into a training program that she could then release them in terms of assisting in this ministry. So first, of course, it would be relationships with people that she meets, with people who show interest, personal contact. John 1:46 describes this kind of interaction with people, where Phillips found Nathanael and told him, we have found the one Moses wrote about in the law, and about the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. And Nathanael's response, Nathanael, can anything good come from Nazareth? Can anything good come from there? And Nathanael asked, come and see, said Philip. Well, there was a relationship there that Nathanael and Philip had, and out of that relationship, Philip could say, come and see. Well, there are going to be people that Keturah meets in Ireland, and she can say, come and see. Come and see what this ministry is all about. Come check it out. Relationship. Then out of another source of contacts, the women that she counsels, out of the help that they've received, they'll be able to help other people. And this is reflective of 2 Corinthians 1:4, where it says, speaking of the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles, so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves have received from God. And so the people that maybe in January that she counsels, maybe by November, or maybe by the next January, they're ready to help someone else. Sometimes it's not that long a time, but out of the help that they've received, then helping others. So that's really what ministry is about, isn't it? Okay, a third. She's going to be doing some public speaking, and so each time she goes out, I've encouraged her, let people know that you need people to help you in this ministry. So public speaking opportunities at schools, at community events, things of that nature. And this is reflective of Acts 17:22. Here's Paul, and he's out in a public arena, and he's sharing the gospel. This is Acts 17:22, and it says, then Paul stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and said, men of Athens, I see that in every way that you're very religious. And he began to share the gospel with them. Here he's in a public place, but he's letting people know about Jesus, about the resurrection. And you see that because of that, there was some interest there. When you go out, let people know what you're doing. yes, share your testimony, but also let them know how they can be involved, okay? A fourth area, through letters that she sends to other churches, to other church leaders, asking for names of people that they'd recommend. You see, the custom in Acts 13 in the book of Acts was that Paul and the others would go to the synagogues. And they'd be asked to share as visiting Jewish men, and they'd be asked to, you know, just share something. And so Paul and the others would say, well, thank you for this opportunity. Let me tell you about Jesus Christ. And through these letters and contacts with other ministries, she's saying, you know, I can't do this by myself. And I know that there are many in your churches and in your ministry organizations who may need some help in this area. Help me to help them. A fifth area would be through other ministries that may provide volunteers. I've encouraged her to get in touch with a youth with a mission base that's in Dublin and to get in touch with other missions organizations. Acts 18:24 provides an example of this, where there's some networking going on. Another place would be to use any public notices in the community kind of media that's available, whether it be putting something in a laundromat, just hanging up a little sign saying there's going to be a training session on training counselors to help in this ministry, or if it's some other kind of notice or an article that can be in the newspaper, just ways of getting the word out. This is a ministry that's here in this community, and we need some help here. Another source of helpers for her in this ministry would be from interns from local Bible colleges and seminaries. This giving college students, seminary students, an opportunity to have some hands-on experience. And so I've encouraged Keturah, you know, find out about any local Bible colleges. The local church that she's going to be a part of has its own training center. So let the word be known there that your ministry is offering training. And then eighth would be the training session itself. You know, that as she's putting the word out, you know, we're going to have some training sessions on how to share the gospel and how to help people in crisis. Come and be a part of that. Now, I encouraged her to have a disclaimer there that even though someone may complete the ministry training, that may not necessarily qualify them to be a part of this ministry. She's kind of leaving herself an out there, which is a very important thing oftentimes. We find someone that go through all the teacher training or they go through all the counselor training or whatever, and you know, you just have a sense of, I don't think so, you know. And so you can say to that person, well, maybe not this position, but how about if you help us in this area? But nevertheless, the training session itself can be a way of recruiting people, assisting, and helping. This disclaimer that after the selection of ministry assistants will come after the training, after an interview, after some references and that type of thing. So found the hard way. It's important to leave yourself an out in some areas. But here's eight sources for the ministry that hasn't been done in this area before. But I feel that if she follows these eight steps, she'll get some people to help her in what she's seeking to do. Similarly with in our situations. Oftentimes we feel like, you know, we're the only ones doing this stuff. And yet, if we'll just let the word be known and if we'll do some of these different things, you know, through relationships, through people that we've been counseling, through public speaking opportunities, through other kinds of contacts, whatever. I've even known of some church planters who've moved to areas and have gone to local churches and said, may I borrow some of your people to provide some temporary infrastructures, some teachers and some assistants working with the youth and the nursery and that type of thing, until our own church is raised up to a point where we can have our own people in those positions. And guess what? I found that some churches cooperated in that area. Isn't that surprising? But to see, well, you know, we can't do it all ourselves. Here, let's assist this ministry in getting started. And that was a wonderful testimony to the body of Christ working together. Well, recruiting people to assist in carrying out the mission of a ministry is sometimes approached negatively. You know, where in the world am I going to get someone who will do this job? And we think about, oh, no, I've got to recruit somebody. Yeah, but instead, I'd encourage you to think of recruiting as recruiting is providing an enriching opportunity for someone to grow in their relationship with the Lord in ways they would not otherwise be able to experience. You know, we'll have a positive approach ourselves about this whole matter of recruiting. And you can do this when you reflect on how, you know, opportunities that you've had, you know, maybe somebody recruited you to do something, and in doing that, you found you were growing in your relationship with the Lord because of, you know, you'd never been there before, you'd never done that before, but in being there and doing that, you found, wow, Lord, thank you, I'm grateful for this opportunity. So think about it, you know, in terms of maybe recruiting a teacher. To recruit a teacher is to give someone the opportunity to grow in their knowledge of the Lord and His Word. My mother she taught Sunday school up until the week, the Sunday before she went to the hospital, and her death is March of 2001. But she just delighted in being a Sunday school teacher, and because she said, I just learned so much myself. Well, we need to provide people opportunities to grow in their knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ. And I am so grateful for some of the books that my sister and I divided that my mother had, where she just marked through or preparing for her Sunday school lessons. One of the resources that she used, some of you may have used this little resources by Warren Wiersbe, is With the Word. It's just a concise chapter by chapter summary of the whole Bible. And the notes that my mama made in the margin of that book are just precious to me, because I know that, you know, that God was speaking to her even as she was preparing to teach her Sunday school class. Well, to recruit a home group leader is to give someone the opportunity to grow in their life-giving skills. When you see a home group leader as being really functioning as a pastor, that he's taking what you're doing with a home group, is you're saying, you know, here's this portion of the flock, and I want you to take care of these people. Would you nurture them? Would you take care of them? And, you know, you can really see Psalm 23 being lived out by many of our home group leaders who take seriously, I want to take care of these people. I want to see that they are properly cared for. Well, to recruit a finance team member is to give someone the opportunity to grow in their faith in praying for the church and the financial needs of the church. just recently, a couple of guys on our financial team, I shared with them, I said, you know, hey, we need to be praying about this. You know, this time of the year, we're not seeing, you know, the giving as in some other times of the year, but yet the needs are the same. Pray about that. And so to recruit somebody, you know, not just because they're good with numbers, but to see them as also people of faith and to pray over those numbers. To recruit a counselor is to give someone the opportunity to grow in wisdom and the ability to assist other people. To recruit a youth leader is to give someone the opportunity to get gray hair faster. It's the opportunity to grow in their prayer life. The Bible talks about grow the knowledge, grow in your faith. And so we're really paying a compliment to them. We're saying, you know, I feel like the Lord wants to do this work in your life, and come along with me in doing this. So give other people opportunities to grow. Give them a challenge and ask them to help you with the burden the Lord has given you for this area of ministry. I saw a great example of the power of giving someone an opportunity to grow in their relationship with the Lord on a missions trip. It was a youth missions trip to Mexico. We started out in Juarez, El Paso, in a large conference center with 400 youth and adults. We had a couple of days of training, team building, and then we divided into different groups to go to different cities in Mexico. Well, as we were getting acquainted with one another in our group, Sip, who was our group leader, told us a story. He said that when he was 19 years old, he left his home in San Antonio and took the bus to El Paso. He didn't have a job or a place to live. He just left home, be on his own. And so he gotten off the bus, and he was sitting in the city park in El Paso and wondering what to do next when a young man came up to him there on the park bench and started talking to him. The young man, Dale, invited him to a home-cooked meal, and through a meal around the dinner table, Sip became a Christian, as Dale and his parents shared the gospel with him. Well, that was over 25 years ago, and Dale is the pastor who has this vision for missions, and he asked his old friend to help him. He asked him first as a youth leader at the church, later as an associate pastor and missions team leader, and soon Sip will be going back to San Antonio to start a church there. See, each time Sip has been recruited by Dale to take on more responsibility, Sip's faith has grown. It was just a great honor to be with him. It reminded me, you know, that we have an impact on the lives of other people, and sometime we've neglected the opportunity to help them in growing in their faith because we didn't think that they'd be interested. You know, we didn't bother to ask them. Now, sometimes recruiting is easy. We wish it was always this way. For example, we needed to start a new Sunday school class for the youth, and I announced the need, just announced it one Sunday morning, and Sherry volunteered that morning after the worship service was over, just came right up to me and said, I'd like to do that. Well, you know, that did it. Doesn't happen that way very often, but that did it. You know, one brief announcement, we had a new teacher. Her 6-month contract is now, you know, well into 2 years. And she enjoys it. She sees that as her ministry there at the church. Well, other times we have to do some of the kinds of things I mentioned that our friend will have to do to recruit trainees for her ministry. In recruiting, as Malfers points out, it's important to give a full list of expectations and available resources so that someone can prayerfully decide if the job or the timing for the job is right for them. Sometimes the ideal candidate can have legitimate reasons for not being able to take on the responsibility at that time, and it may be best to wait until that person is available instead of settling for someone else. The person's spouse needs to be included in the decision. Even though we'd like to check off that we've recruited someone after the lunch meeting, it's best to wait until the person has had the time to talk it over at home. Recruiting to the vision has to do with letting the person you're hoping to interest in the opportunity know how their part fits into the total vision for where you sense the Lord wants you and the ministry to go. Now, releasing visionary creativity is providing the kind of atmosphere where people are empowered to do what God has put in their hearts to do. As equippers of saints, Ephesians 4:12, our ministry is not reaching its maximum impact until we're doing what Paul talked about in 2 Timothy 2:2, committing what we have received from the Lord to other faithful people who will then teach others. A biblical standard for ministry success is how many pastors is this pastor raising up? How many evangelists is this evangelist raising up? How many teachers and so forth? Before going any farther, let's do a brief word study on the word that's translated equipping in the New American Standard Version and the New King James Version in Ephesians 4:12. Because the King James Version uses the word perfecting instead of a word like equipping or preparing as the New International Version uses, the idea of pastors and other leaders as equippers is a foreign concept to many ministry professionals. Now, this word that's used here, I'll make an attempt at pronouncing the Greek here, kartartismos, K-A-R-T-A-R-T-I-S-M-O-S. Now, this is a derivative of a karizo, which means to complete thoroughly, to prepare, in Strong's Concordance. And Vine's expository dictionary sees this word as the fitting or preparing fully. In the context of Ephesians 4, the people, the hagios, H-A-G-I-O-S, the saints, the called out ones, the consecrated ones, they're the ones who are to do the work, E-R-G-O-N, ergon, of the ministry. And it's interesting, some of these words here, the basis of these words, the ministry, diakonos, an interesting word that's the basis for deacon, diakonia, one who serves. That's D-I-A-K-O-N-S, ministry, D-I-A-K-O-N-I-A, for diakonia, one who serves. Speaking of theology of ministry, if a church takes equipping the saints seriously, you know, just talk about revolutionizing the way that church staff and members look at doing ministry. Instead of hiring staff to do the work of the Lord, a church will look for people who see coaching and coming alongside and facilitating, equipping, preparing as prime job requirements. Ministry leaders who find their identity in what they do, as in hours of counseling, visiting, administration, etc., will instead be freed up to be and find their real identity in Christ. This concept of ministry is unfathomable to some pastors. I'm the only one qualified to do the work of ministry, they'll say. That's what they pay me to do. If you want to do something right, you got to do it yourself. You know, all kinds of protests they'll give about this. You see, the phrase, the priesthood of all believers, was a key teaching of the Protestant Reformation. Yet the professional approach to ministry, where only staff personnel do the ministry, is the functional equivalent of limiting the priesthood today. How seriously do we believe in the priesthood of all believers? Here's a theological concept, the priesthood of all believers, but yet where's the practice of that being lived out? How can a church change from ministry of professional staff only to an equipping the saints for ministry approach? See, that's where releasing visionary creativity comes in. The pastor sets the tone for welcoming the ideas and input of the people. The people are encouraged to share their ideas. Their good ideas are talked about from the pulpit, and there's a freedom to be creative. when people know and understand what the vision is, they can rejoice in the liberty of adding their unique contributions to seeing the vision come to fruition. In Barbara's case, because the church was outreach-oriented already, her idea of a Christmas shopping center was readily accepted. Her idea fit the vision. But what about those times when someone says, why don't we do fill in the blank? And we want to give them a no, because I said so recently. But that only worked until our children were able to talk, right? Now, here, your theology, your beliefs about ministry, will shape your responses to someone's good idea. If you know what God has called you to do, and you're clear about the direction you're headed, then you can say, yeah, that'd be great, or no, that's not the direction this bus is headed. And here's why. Here's a story about a church that learned a powerful lesson in not allowing the virtue of hospitality to overshadow their theological underpinnings. It started with a good idea and was almost disastrous. In an effort to increase visibility in their community and to participate in outreach efforts to the community, this church decided to allow their building to be used by various 12-step groups. As space was provided for the literature used by the organization, as several of the church's leaders began reading the literature, the leaders saw that the guiding principles of the 12-step programs sharply differed from the gospel message preached by the church. While the message of salvation through faith in Jesus Christ and repentance of sins leads to being a new creation, 2 Corinthians 5:17, it was seen that a different gospel was being proclaimed through the 12-step groups. The church leaders wondered what to do. As other churches provide for this organization's meetings, what made this church think it was better than other churches? What about the witness of kicking out a group when an agreement had been made for the groups to meet there? The pros of providing a place that might help someone not drink and drive were weighed against the cons of feeling their building was being defiled by practitioners of a false religion. Some other issues surfaced also in regard to the use of the building, and church leaders met with the 12-step leaders to discuss the matters. The church leaders chose not to bring up theological, philosophical disagreements and focused on building use issues and set a date for the groups to show compliance or vacate. More concerns were expressed about the church building being used by groups whose teachings were incompatible with Christianity. And finally, the church leaders decided to put in writing their concerns. As the majority of the 12-step group attenders were also members of other churches in the community, no one from the church itself attended the group meetings. Diplomatically phrasing the letters stating objections to the continued use of the building was a matter of much concern. It became the pastor's lot to call the president of the 12-step organization to tell him to look for the letter when the group came to their next meeting. But to the pastor's great relief, the 12-step president said, I've been meaning to call you. We found another place to meet, and I was going to let you know when our last meeting at your church is going to be. The pastor tore up the letter and never told the 12-step president about the church's decision to ask the group to leave. Ray Anderson in The Shape of Practical Theology says that instead of asking WWJD, what would Jesus do, that we ask, what is Jesus doing? From the many churches that provide a meeting place for 12-step groups, those churches may say, this is what Jesus is doing. We're showing God's love to some people in our community through allowing our building to be used so that marriages might be mended, life salvaged, increase job productivity, keep drunks off the road, etc., etc. But others might say, no, this is what Jesus is doing. Those groups don't belong here. This is what Jesus is doing, offering new life to people through the power of the cross, where their identity is in Christ and not in a particular lifestyle. And we don't want to promote anything less. The good idea, since the building isn't being used on those nights anyway, how about letting it be used by? Seems like a non-theological issue, as Boy Scouts and daycare and all kinds of groups use church buildings during the week. But this became a theological issue as the church leaders began reading the literature of the 12-step organization and found the organization's teachings to be incompatible with the beliefs of the church. Perhaps if the purpose, vision, beliefs, values, mission of the church had been more clearly stated, the church leaders could have avoided answering the question in the first place, or have been able to say, no, that doesn't fit with who we are or where we're going. Now, just consider some typical responses leaders give to good idea people. There's the spiritual answer. Let me pray about that. Sometimes prayer is offered over the idea, but sometimes it's not. I had lunch with a young man who had gone to two pastors in the area to ask for their approval and blessing in starting a new church. He was told, we'll pray about it and get back with you. Well, 3 weeks later, they still hadn't gotten back with him. Maybe they were totally against what he wanted to do. Well, he deserved the courtesy of being told why. Second, there's the, you really ought to talk to so-and-so about that, kind of avoidance answer. Now, that can be a good answer, but can also be a cop-out to always refer to someone else. Three, there's the postpone for now of answer of, yes, I'd like that, but I'm not sure how that'll work in our present, you know, schedule, budget, whatever, plans. Again, kind of putting someone off. Or fourth, there's the no, but maybe later, yeah, right, when it snows in South Georgia in July answer. You know, again, putting someone off as far as we can. And fifth, there's the now who are you kind of an answer. That you'll first have to go see so-and-so, and then as you emerge as a leader, then you'll have more receptivity to what you're saying kind of an answer. This sometimes happens where someone is told to jump through particular hoops in order to be able to do what they feel God has called them to do. Well, how about church leadership that lets our yeses be yes and our noes be no? How about more people like Barnabas, who are willing to take a risk on people like Saul, as you see in Acts 9:27? You talk about a risk that Barnabas took, but he took that risk. Clear vision makes for creative visionaries who come alongside and say, what about if we do this? You know, we're not the only one that God speaks to. We're proclaiming to people that God speaks to people today, that through God's preached word, that faith comes. And we're saying that people can have a relationship with God. And so why should we be surprised when people get ideas? Let me just share some of these ideas with you. An idea like a woman named Anne Hall had. Her name is Anne Hall. She had the idea about a summer recreation program for physically challenged children. Parents drove from over 50 miles away. They heard that something special was being offered for their special children. An incredible blessing in that community. Or like the founder of a ministry called Mountaintop. This is Tennessee Outreach Project. He got the idea for youth groups to come in and help poor families in the Cumberland Mountain areas of Tennessee and Kentucky by doing small repairs, building outhouses, porches, whatever, getting acquainted with the people, sharing faith in different part of the country. For a number of years now, youth groups from all over the country come to Tennessee and Kentucky to be a part of Mountaintop, Tennessee Outreach Program. Somebody had an idea. As I was thinking about what did I want to share with you in this class, I got a phone call the other day. It was a man, part of the first church where I was pastor. We were talking about some things, and I remembered that it was his mama, Miss Eva, who just got the idea that she wanted their church to no longer be on a circuit where the preacher preached at their church and three or four other churches. And she wanted her church to be a station church where they would have services every Sunday. And so she got the idea. She announced that she was going to start a parsonage fund. Her children's Sunday school class was going to start raising money for it. And so she brought out this jar one Sunday, you know, had all the change that the children had taken up in Sunday school that morning, and said, we're starting a parsonage fund. And it was my honor. I'd just been at that church when they had a note burning of the mortgage. Her vision, her dream about seeing a parsonage built and that leading to that church becoming a full-time church, that had become a reality. It was an idea, but it started with Miss Eva. What we're talking about in terms of releasing visionary creativity is helping people to walk backwards. So that's kind of an interesting phrase. A friend who was a church consultant talked often about getting people to think about what they wanted to accomplish as a church by walking backwards. He would ask them, where do you hope to be 10 years from now? Church leaders would say, well, we'd like to be a, you know, blank member church, you know, 500 member church or whatever. Then he'd say, okay, walk backwards from there. How many Sunday school classes will you need? How many small groups? How many leaders? Will your building accommodate that many people? What will you need to do to accommodate that many people? You know, just walk backwards. Think about it all. Well, sometimes in walking backwards, some church leaders will say, well, you know, we really don't want to get into all that. We just want a few more people to start coming. And then it would be clear that they needed to think about their vision some more. What did God call them to be and to do? What would they need to do to live out their vision? Well, let's be clear on the vision. Well, in our next session together, we're going to be talking about communicating the vision, especially as preachers and being visionary communicators. And so I look forward to sharing that information with you in our next time together. Thank you.